Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, Thomas Brooks.
Hello, hello. I'm here. You're here.
Yeah.
We're back.
The wind cannot stop us this week because it is not windy.
It is not windy. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
The trials and tribulations of northern New Mexico.
Yeah, the weather's
been
weird. We might get snow.
Ah, hopefully it'll be after I leave.
Maybe. We might get snow Friday.
Ah, damn.
At the time of recording this, which will be like the day before I post it online. So we are continuing our deep dive into, like, we're still on the shallow end, but our dive into the CAPE book, this multidimensional model of fan interest, and we are moving into chapter 4, meaning making. And I don't know who wrote this chapter.
Did you write this chapter?
I did.
See, I didn't really, like, just to back up to the writing process for this book, like, I was shooting for, like, a certain degree of, like, word length, and then I get to some of these chapters, and it's like, these are short chapters. I'm like, what was I doing?
I'm pretty sure I wrote considerably more than this, because, like, this chapter and chapter 5, when I think of, like, my interest in fan research, these are like my children. Like, these are like the two topics that I am the most fascinated by. When I got involved in Brony study in 2010, no, it was 2011, 2012, over a decade ago, it was kind of the first thing I was interested in looking at. And that was something that me and Pat Edwards delved into in some of the surveys that I got involved in, was this idea of, like, can we start asking questions about finding meaning, finding purpose, identity development, things like that, which still isn't, like, big in the literature. I mean, there's obviously people who are looking at, like, how we find meaning in our stuff, but, like, as we take this into the next chapter, it gets a little more specific. But it's just always been fascinating for me, especially with fandom, because this is pretty clear in, like, religious studies, or with, like, religious or potentially political identity, where, like, people find, like, meaning and purpose and moral codes and things like that within these systems. But, like, how does it manifest in football fans,
right?
Furries? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Where do you want to start with this? I could ramble.
I feel like we should maybe lay the groundwork on this idea of, like, transcendence and profundity first, and this idea that, like, you know, like, I feel like we bang this drum every time we get on to record that, like, all groups, like, provide similar benefits. And I think, like, it's written in nearly all of our articles, like, fandoms, like all other social identities, Tosh Felt,
right,
Turner, 1979, provide a sense of meaning to people. And so, but this basic idea that, like, there's something magical that happens when you get a group of people together, where individuals get to both, like, reaffirm their own interest and identity and self by being a part of a group, and then have that, like, be reflected back at them to reinforce it. And it kind of creates this, like, optimal distinctiveness loop that enables people to, like, make decisions about who they are and what their values are, and, you know, what they stand for and what kind of, like, behavior is appropriate for them. And so with, like, fandom specifically, like, it seems like, why would people in, like, the Star Wars fandom, like, have this sense of you know, meaning derived from, you know, these movies? But I think it's more of a, like, a bigger picture. It's not like just fandom is just a incarnation of what happens when you get people together in a group, rather than like there's something like specifically magical about fandom.
Yeah, and it kind of again gets down to like the purpose of like why we bond and find these sort of groups. So like Star Wars, it's like the signal. It's like the beacon or the lighthouse that like brings everyone like to the same point. And we'll talk about this with like display and stuff later. I think there's a display chapter.
Probably.
I'm gonna
Be weird
like
if there
look.
wasn't.
It would be maybe self-disclosure. There isn't like a specific.
I bet you it's in self-disclosure.
Yeah, and so like with display, like that's one of those things where you see someone and you're like, ooh, like they like the same things I do. They're probably thinking, and that what there's biases that we cut back on like the biases that we cover. So like
Well, we
perceive
ran out
similar,
of
yeah, I know, perceive
them.
similarities bias, where like we perceive other people to be more similar to us. But like when they like something that we like, it's like exacerbated, it's exemplified or expanded. And we end up with these kind of symbols, signals, spaces to go and engage with people who are like us. And through those spaces, we do the things that we would do in any large group. We learn more about who we are. We have discussions about morality and ethics. I mean, maybe not like at the highbrow level, but we're talking with people. And in those discussions, what is right? What is wrong? What should we do? What are pathways that are acceptable and unacceptable in life? And and through those, we kind of find, we'll talk about in the next chapter, like sense of purpose in some areas, but even at the most basic level, just like meaning. I want more of this. I want this sort of social interaction, whatever it may be.
I think some like really grounded examples of these ethical discussions you see in fandom are with like fan created content. And so like fan fiction or cosplayers, like a lot of discussions around ethics and morality happen with those two like particular like sections of fandom. So like they can be pretty basic like plagiarism questions when it comes, or like canon questions when it comes to like fan fiction. But it could also be like, I think we talked about this a long time ago, but do you remember that crazy article that got retracted, the Shota as
Yes.
methodology? Yeah. So like, can you depict minors like in situations that would otherwise be illegal? Even though like this is the written word and not like an actual child. And so like you could have this like varied level of discussion around ethics there. You can with cosplayers, it's like how accurate does the cosplay need to be? You get into lots of conversations about race and gender with cosplayers,
Oh, yeah.
as well as like public indecency potentially as well, like how scantily clad can your Leia outfit be? Are also conversations that kind of direct and like corral people around like the sense of like right or wrong. And so I think those two in particular are like particularly those two in particular are particularly particular. Those two examples, I think, where you see a lot of that like meaning making and like morality building, as it relates to like fans actively like contributing to the fandom in those ways.
And it is definitely not. It made me think. So I was scrolling through Reddit, and this is the third top rated like hot post on subreddit drama at the time of
Okay.
recording. The bi-daily argument on the subreddit for Genshin Impact about whether or not drawn childborn is ethical.
Right.
It's this constant but we have to retract, no one's talking about it, so we have to retract the weird Shota article. Yeah, but like, yeah, these are things where in those spaces you have people who are like walking that sort of gray line of it being art or drawings, and then you have, kind of people taking different sides. But those are similar, the same spaces that we would be having, like if we weren't be having them there, we might be having this discussion in a classroom or amongst a group of friends when you read a headline like this or an article like this or a retraction like that.
In a church.
And yeah, whether or not we're talking, I mean, and even getting in down to like the writing and the literature, talking about the nature, like talking about it from a religious side, talking about the nature of like, what does this passage in the Bible mean? We have fans talking about like, what did the author of this fan fiction like imply by engaging and then like this particular, event happening or getting upset because they're changing an aspect of a character. I also want to sort of add with that is that there are also spaces in that by consuming the fan content and reading and engaging and watching whatever they're doing with it, they also it's a space for people to learn about themselves as well. What do they want to do? What do they find important? If they relate or parasocially relate to a character, they might learn something about themselves through that and find meaning through that sort of exploration, which is really fascinating when it comes to this, because these are not typically a lot of the research is typically talking about like football fans and like entertainment. We're not really having discussions about football fans finding purpose or meaning in the games that they watch.
Oh, I'll address that because I have a theory that probably needs to be tested, and since we're fandom researchers, we probably should actually test this.
Some point.
But I do have a story. So buckle up because I had the wildest ride to Texas a couple weeks ago
Ooh.
where I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast episode where he interviews Dr. Phil.
Oh, Joe Rogan's podcast has been off of my radar for a while. Like I've watched like a hand, like a large handful of episodes with particular guests, but probably not in like 5 years.
Oh, so first of all, it's wild, and I like thought Joe was a little bit too slobbery over Dr. Phil for my taste. CR, King and Queen of the Rodeo
Yeah.
podcast episode on our thoughts and feelings about Dr. Phil. But Dr. Phil made a very good point, I thought, because like you could say that there's probably a fandom around Dr. Phil, right?
Definitely.
And he was asked, what do you do with the people that like come to your show with a problem and they don't do what you say they should do and then they leave with the same problem? Like, is that an issue for your show at all? And Dr. Phil was like, well, not really, like it's an issue for that individual, yeah, but like it's actually way more helpful to the viewers than like the person who comes on and does all the right things and then like leaves and has a happy life. He says that he gets letters from viewers, which I'm like, who's writing letters to Dr. Phil?
It was a
Saying that they
different time in television, Thomas. Like
but he's
you
still
wrote letters
on.
to people. I mean, yeah, but like his fandom has aged with him.
Okay, fair,
Like
fair.
how many Zoomers are watching Dr. Phil?
I don't know. And the only reason millennials watched it was because of Catch Me Outside. How about that, girl? So, but he said that he gets letters from people who watch the episodes with the person who like has like eight things wrong with them and then they don't fix any of them by the end of the show. And the viewers are like, hey, I don't have all eight things wrong with me, but I got two of those things that that dude had that was on your show, and I'm going to change them now because I saw myself in him, and that was way too close for comfort. And so I was like, okay, like fandom meaning making, identifying the self, like, we're gonna talk about personal growth later, but like this idea of like you were mentioning with the content being reflected back at you, and then you digesting that and determining like what, figuring out kind of the epistemology of the self, basically.
Do we owe Dr. Phil like a quasi apology?
No.
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 That at least speaks to some benefit of like the spectacle of watching these people go through this, is that it does give you like a very real opportunity. It's probably also like the benefit of just like really schlocky reality TV shows, where like you see like the edited worst of the worst of people, and you're like, maybe I need to rethink something about my life. And it might make someone better, and that's good. But yeah.
But also, we're like kings courting like mental illness as jesters across daytime TV. So like that's also a little
Right,
cringe.
right. Yeah.
No, my idea about, because you brought up the idea of like football, like how are people like making meaning out of football, right? I'm thinking it's a terror management thing, where
Oh, yeah.
you use the fandom to give yourself both like a self-esteem boost. So like, my team won the Super Bowl, so now I feel good about myself. And your support of that team and belonging to that group that's dedicated to that team will live beyond you and has probably lived before you. And so, like, the Dallas Cowboys are going, have existed longer than the fandom has, the current people in the fandom, and will continue to exist long after everybody currently in the fandom has died. And so there might be like a well, like a self-esteem and like immortality element to like fandoms that aren't necessarily like probing viewers with like philosophical questions about the self.
Yeah, how does that work though for Dallas Cowboys fans? Because like
Who continuously lose?
does that like move
I
out of the
will
realm
say.
of terror management into just like sheer cognitive dissonance?
Just got, well, I mean, honestly, like it may be like just the pride of watching your team play.
Yeah, no,
Like
there's
the winning
definitely
is
that.
great, obviously, but like just the idea of like watching and belonging to the group offers some terror management. I'll even say that like last, what was it? Actually, it was like November 1st last year when the Texas Rangers won the World Series for the first time. Like, I don't watch the Texas Rangers. I've been to like one game and I was like 12. I don't think about them at all. But boy, I was like real jazzed the next day after like watching that the night before.
Yeah, it's
I was like, this is contagious.
I was living in outside of New Orleans when the Saints won their first Super Bowl, like their only Super Bowl, and like that like huge thing. There were people who came out of the woodworks who would never talk about football for years after that event. Were just like, we love the Saints, like they're great, like it just everything under the sun. In terms of like the positivity that came with that. So like they just have to win like one every now and then. One.
Yeah,
And
like,
that'll
yeah, just
galvanize
one.
everyone else. Yeah. But yeah, no,
I will
I get that.
say, yeah, and like, I will say too, like, this pernicious side of fandom that will come creeping up, like, throughout our episodes, I'm sure. I 100% bought the World Series Texas Rangers t-shirt at the airport the next day. Like, and I had no business doing that, and I would not have done that had I not watched it the night before. And now, like, I don't know, like they totally snatched me and snatched my money, and now I have like a core memory of watching that damn game after not watching a game for like 15 years.
That reminds me of so this year's Super Bowl, Taylor Swift's boyfriend was in it or something.
Oh, are we a Swiftie? Are we a Swiftie, Dr. Jedborn?
No, not particularly, but I probably follow Taylor Swift more than I follow football. So I'm like a really bad football fan. But no, like apparently, like the revenue increase just having Taylor Swift there. So in that case, it was Taylor Swift fans who were interested in football, not because of football. They didn't care less about football, but they might show Taylor Swift. and she's there, and her boyfriend is playing. And so there's this like parasocial investment with that, because they're getting their meaning and you know, through her music and her life and other things like that. And so when it moves over to football, so I was the radio, NPR was talking about that. I think it was NPR. Taylor Swift is like in talks to be the next halftime show, next year, because they made like so much money. They could
I
easily
believe.
boost their ratings, and they're kind of putting that on like Taylor Swift, like which like all I can think of is like she's got like the perfect, like the report that has come out of like NFL spending and like the revenue and stuff that they made, like she could ask them for whatever she wants and they have to give it to her if they
Oh,
want,
yeah.
and they will make it back.
Oh, yeah.
At
It's not
some
like
point
they
we
don't
should,
have a beaucoup of money anyway.
it's tied to I'll kind of go back to stuff that we've talked about in some of the last chapters. It's tied specifically to that eudaimonic motivation. So it's definitely not hedonic. You're not like getting pleasure from finding meaning. It feels good though, like to find something that gives you some sort of meaning in your life, but it's specifically what's tied to sort of that eudaimonic motivation, meaning making, purpose, things like that, personal growth.
Cool. So, what would you say is the most meaningful piece of media that you have engaged with that gave you a sense of meaning in a meaningful way?
Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I say that as a joke, but seriously, like it was, I had already delved into the research and in some of the meaning making and finding purpose. We'd already created a scale. I had not read Frankl before that, and I read it for History of Psych when I was a student, going back to get my PhD, and it was a rough first half and an insightful second half. Because the first half is like he's in a concentration camp and his whole history there, and then the second half is about like his theoretical concept, like so he's the Freud counter of it's not pleasure, but we seek meaning, and that meaning is different for every person. We just have to find our meaning. I mean, as far as like media goes, that's probably the top. Is fan media, I don't know. I read a lot of books that like I read a lot of like sci-fi stuff, and like I probably derive meaning or understanding of the world and like aspects of like right and wrong for some of that, like especially growing up, read way, can't read too much, but I read a lot growing up. Yeah, I don't, I'm trying to think if there has been anything that was like really stood out as like meaningful. Don't know. What about you? I don't know. I'm thinking of it.
There are a couple things I can think of, some like TV show or like some like. You know, like obviously, like I'm a Harry Potter generation, so like that was incredibly meaningful. Like that whole experience, I think the chapter touches on this idea of like shared experiences are really important. And so like, you know, like getting to like read the books as they came out and then watch the movies as they came out was like way cool. Like, and having that experience of like, oh my gosh, like Harry Potter 5 is gonna like be released tomorrow. We have to go to Borders.
Yeah, I did get the we were at, me my wife and I were at one of the releases, but like we were all, like I think we were in well into college when like the final ones were, or we had finished college when like the final ones were being written.
Oh, I was totally in high school.
yeah
So that was like
yeah
meaningful as a kid. I think the Avatar: The Last Airbender series was super meaningful to watch in
I
terms
was.
of like worldview and like morality. Like that's a really cool like exploration of that.
I was well into adulthood for that
And like
too.
as an see like these are like core memories of childhood.
But
Well, the one my
I
adulthood
did
one I
watch it
think would
coming
be
out, yeah. Oh,
my adulthood one would definitely be like probably BoJack Horseman, because I just like left home and like figuring out adulthood, and then like watching that as like this like failed like totally toxic human like looked back on his life while I'm looking forward on my life, like it was well timed.
yeah, I think thinking about it, I could maybe probably pick a couple of like video games that I've played that have had that either allowed me to like bond with friends or were very kind of like again that shared experience. There were a couple of earlier fandoms playing D&D growing up to some extent was a great place to like explore different characters and like interact with your friends. I'm trying to think, probably the big book series for me is probably Lord of the Rings. And it wasn't like new for me, but like it was the in between, like Harry Potter hadn't come out yet. I read a lot of Michael Crichton in high school, and it was probably like I read it in like middle school too, way before I understood some of it. But like I still find like Jurassic Park is like my favorite book of all time. And there's a lot of discussion in there on like what we should be doing with science and like maybe it's probably motivated some of my science ethics, you know. And the book's very different from the movie. But yeah, it's stuff like that. Probably the one that's hit me recently is I mean within like the last chunk of years was the God of War 4, so the reboot with like him and his son, and I bawled at the end of that one. Like it was because it's about like a father growing and like trying to be a good person. Like you know this, I don't have like the sordid history that Kratos does, right? But like that like universal of like you're a dad and you're trying to like figure it out as you go. And you just sort of like going through that. And that was definitely one that I think had like I guess like a meaningful impact on me, especially because it was like at the time when it came out, I got to play it. It wasn't like I'm playing it like 10 years later.
Right. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess our next episode, we should talk about what do we do with this meaning?
Yeah, we're gonna move into purpose. So, until then, we'll say goodbye.
Well, goodbye.